Blog Talk Radio.
Well, here we go, ladies and gentlemen. If it's Saturday, we keep it going, even on the Labor Day weekend. Hope you're having a blessed one. It's a Doc Talk podcast hosted by a brother, a mentor, and a friend out there in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, Dr. Greg Roscoe. Yours truly, 2,500 miles to the west of him, producing early rise with a Denver omelet, sourdough toast, minus the butter, country potatoes, no ketchup. Mark Mancini. 347-205-9631. If you happen to miss it, 60 minutes goes quicker than Dan Rather's 60 minutes. Catch the archive version, blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports, podcast platforms, wherever you subscribe to podcasts, powered now by Mancini Media. So without further ado, as I lay the red carpet down, put the podium in its place, hand off the mic, the threes, Doc, how are you? How can people get a hold of you? The brothers are back, the Varicalo brothers. You got Kimberly Resnick Anderson wanting to get on your great show. I'll man the boards. I'll see you at 11:05, my brother.
Wow, you've got it all laid out this holiday weekend. Mark, thank you very much. Good morning, listeners. It's a beautiful weekend here in Pittsburgh. And again, we celebrate Labor Day. We have Monday off. So thank you all for listening. You know, we've been doing a series on cancers pertaining to different parts of our body. We've been, talking to different types of surgeons. We've done some women's health, and we still have more to do. If I can just follow up with that a little bit, Mark. You know, next week we'll be talking about renal cancer or kidney cancer, and then the week after we're talking about cancer of the voice box. We also have a very interesting guest coming on. It's Kimberly Resnick Anderson. And, you know, we talk and we kind of giggle sometime about sex therapy. However, she's a sex therapist, very successful, very professional, and deals with very intimate problems that couples do face. And we're planning to have her on in about 3 to 4 weeks. In addition to all that, we're planning to conclude our cancer series with a 90-minute show with a cancer roundtable, where we're going to talk with our contributing specialists to give us a little bit of a thumbnail sketch on their cancer and see if there's anything we can bring to fore here where there are similarities or differences between cancers in the human body, at least at this point. However, today is a great day. We've got two specialists that have talked with us before. It's the Varicalo brothers. It's Matt Varicalo, the orthopedic surgeon. His brother, Chris Varicalo, a sports medicine specialist. And, you know, with the NFL season just starting, there's been a lot of reporting about tears of the knee. And usually these tears are referred to ACL tears. And that means anterior cruciate ligament. And, you know, we're seeing a lot of that occur in the new football season. And just as a little bit of an introduction, we'll let Matt carry the ball here in a minute. But an ACL injury is where there's a tear or a sprain of the anterior cruciate ligament of the knee. And now this is a very strong band of tissue that connects our femur bone to the tibia, which is the next bone down in our leg. And these injuries do occur, again, typically with sudden stops, changes in directions, jumping, sports as soccer, basketball, football, downhill skiing. And this morning we're going to talk a little bit about, you know, what causes these things? Why are we seeing these? And indeed, the big thing is, how do we fix them? You know, years and years ago, this type of an injury was actually career ending for many superstar athletes. And just for a little bit of information, if Chris and Matt, if I can go on, is that, you know, we do know about several, you know, very famous football players. Tom Brady is one that did sustain an ACL injury. and he came back, of course, won 4 Super Bowls, you know, et cetera. Another one that we know in the Pittsburgh area is J.J. Watt. He had an injury. However, he came back. Rob Gronkowski, he tore his ACL, had it repaired, and came back. So today, there is a lot of treatments, plus a lot of ways to help these athletes not to go ahead and end their career. So I'd like to go ahead and start, Matt. Do you want to talk a little bit about what's going on in the NFL right now with these types of injuries?
Yeah, absolutely, Greg. And you had an excellent summary to start it off, as always.
Thank you.
As you know, this is a passionate topic of mine. It's probably my favorite orthopedic topic to be discussing. But, yeah, you bring up an interesting point, is that we have already had, you know, prior to the regular season even starting, we've already had 16 ACL tears.
Wow.
And so, obviously, yeah, exactly. And so you think about the lives affected, the careers affected. I love how you touched upon how ACL injuries previously were career-ending injuries, and many athletes were not able to get back to their, we call it their pre-injury level of performance. So if we're talking about a professional football player, you know, the current data actually shows that it varies by position, but if you're a quarterback, there's a potentially a 90 to 95% chance you can get back to your pre-injury level. Now, some of the more demanding positions, yeah, you'll see a slight drop off to that, but still the numbers are pretty high in terms of the expectations for return to pre-injury level. So, for example, running backs, wide receivers might be around the 80 to 85% range. But overall, yeah, the technique has come a long way. There's still a lot of, and we can get into this a little bit later, but
sure.
there's been a lot of, I want to say stagnation, or it's been the gold standard has kind of been the gold standard since the 90s and that decade. So we could talk about some advances in the technique, but a lot of what's happening is been a focus on the prehabilitation side, meaning before the athlete goes down and gets the injury, and then obviously emphasizing the post-operative recovery, which is a lot of times done in tandem with an athletic trainer, a physical therapist, to correct maybe underlying mechanical deficiencies that set that individual up to get that injury. So it's all about correcting it. And what I kind of tell my patients, not to ramble too much here, but I always say when I have an athlete that's in my office that has an ACL tear, I say, our whole goal in medicine would be to prevent you from ever having to be here. But now that you're here, we got to hit this head on and get you through this injury and the recovery process and the surgery. And I never want to have to see you back in the office again, meaning that you're, you know, back to a normal state.
Sure. Mark, you know, Matt, you know, as far as for our audience, why don't we talk about what is the anatomy here? You know, what structures are we talking about? Why is this, why has it been such a devastating injury, you know, to professional players? Skiers.
Yeah.
What is the knee joint all about? How sophisticated is the knee joint? Do you want to talk about that?
Well, yeah, the short answer is it's very sophisticated, and I actually like the anatomical description that you had at the very beginning. The ACL is a very thick, dense band of tissue. It's a ligament, which is different than a tendon. For example, your, you know, quadriceps tendon or your patellar tendon. The way the ACL is structured is a little bit different because it has to withstand certain loads. So you mentioned when an athlete will go and decelerate or slow down or change direction.
Yes.
The ACL is providing that stability between the femur or the thigh bone and the tibia or the shin bone. And really it's rotational stability, but also stabilization in the front to back plane. So let's just break it down by the name and the terminology. So anterior cruciate ligament, anterior meaning in the front. There's another ligament that's in the middle part of the knee called the posterior cruciate ligament. And when you actually look at these ligaments from the front, they cross each other. So that's why they're called cruciates.
And Mark,
obviously, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, Matt, you know, with regard to that anatomy, how many ligaments are there? You know, as far as, say, structure, not to interrupt, your explanation was outstanding.
No.
You know, if we talk about a tendon versus a ligament and then say, hey, in the knee, we have this and that, what's the difference here? And then the other was versus muscle. What's the difference between these three structures that are so important for athletes?
Yeah, another great question. So first off, I kind of alluded to this in a little bit ago, was the difference. So if you look at a tendon versus a ligament, say you take it and look at it under the microscope, you'll see different orientation of the microscopic fibrils. So the way the collagen is lined up on a tendon versus a ligament allows it to perform the function it needs to do. So if you think about the muscles and the tendons around the knee, they're going to be more on the outside part of the knee, not actually within the joint itself, meaning right next to the bones.
Sure.
Something else we can get into, and I'm sure my brother's going to talk about this too, there's a fascinating area of research that, you know, physicians, myself, researchers, we always talk about, is certain athletes, when they tear their ACL, their muscles can be so conditioned, they have such strong muscles and good orientation of these muscles, that they can actually make up for the loss of that ligament. So the muscles and the other dynamic structures around the knee, yes, they can make up for some of that stability, and we actually call them copers. And I'm sure my brother's seen several athletes in his office where they either sprain their ACL, maybe get stretched out a little bit, or even in some cases the ACL will rupture. And we'll have athletes that can, you know, maybe they put a brace on, they can play through basketball and football season remarkably, really. So that's an interesting point there and how that plays in.
And I'd like to go to Chris at this point. Chris, good morning.
Good morning. Thanks for having me. It's a beautiful day in Pennsylvania, isn't it?
It is a beautiful day. And, you know, it's a beautiful day to have you on the program as well. You know, Chris, with regard to we talk about prehab, you know, getting people ready. That's part of what you do in your specialty, isn't it, as far as sports medicine, getting athletes
very much
stronger? Go ahead.
Very much so. I guess just to go back one step back to the muscle, tendon, ligament explanation, I think a good way to understand it for our listeners, Greg, would be to describe the ligaments hold the joints together. Every joint in our body has ligaments that hold the joints together. Two bones coming together create the joint. So your thigh bone coming down to your shin bone creates the knee joint, basically.
Okay.
And then the muscles then create or develop into tendons, and those tendons actually move the joint. So an easy way to think about it is a ligament connects one bone to another bone, a tendon connects a muscle to a bone to actually move the joint. And off of that,
which is important,
you are absolutely correct that, and Matt touched on this as well, is prehabilitation or prophylaxis or a fancy medical term for prevention is very important. And so even before an injury happens, what we look at a lot of times in our athletes, and I just had one come in last week, that the mother was very concerned about how he ran and his balance. He wasn't having any injuries, but she asked me, what can I do to improve his chance at not having an injury in the future? And that's a hard question. There's some things that happen in football, you know, like a tackle where you fall into somebody's knee, and you can't prevent something like that. But Matt would echo this. A lot of our major knee injuries, like ACL injuries, are in a non-contact position, meaning they weren't hit by someone else. They were planting, decelerating, slowing down to a stop, landing from a jumping position, and then the ACL tears happen. So in that regard, there are a lot of things we can do to not completely prevent these types of major injuries, but lessen the chance. And that really comes to muscle strengthening, and not any muscle strengthening, particular muscle strengthening, to help provide more stability to the knee joint, the hip joint, and the lower back and the core. And really in a lot of our sports medicine research, and what I told this parent and athlete that came in last week, was that we need to focus on core strength and core stability, meaning your abdominal muscles, your lower back muscles.
Yes.
And actually, a very important point, and a very important and often ignored muscle, is your butt muscles, your gluteal muscles. Those strengthening of those muscles really can prevent a lot of different injuries in terms of, you know, lower leg injuries, but knee injuries in particular, because there is there's a weakness to these muscles that doesn't get addressed, and it can put patients and athletes in general behind the eight ball in terms of increasing their chance of having an injury. And then when the injury happens, when I see a lot of these athletes first line before they eventually see my brother to get their ACL reconstructed, once an injury happens, we try to optimize the range of motion. So for our listeners, range of motion just means how far you can extend or straighten your leg and bend your knee. And then their strength of a muscle, in particular their quadriceps muscle, where if you look down at your thigh, it's that muscle that lays right on top of your thigh on the front side.
Yeah.
And so a lot of my role when I see these athletes right away is I diagnose, I give the information. We talk about this is a devastating injury, but as you both alluded to, there's a reproducible surgery now to get athletes back to their previous level. But we really focus on doing the prehabilitation, which is physical therapy before surgery, to strengthen up those muscles, improve the range of motion, and help them have a better surgical outcome.
No, excellent. You know, Chris, with regard to that philosophy, you know, as far as I think you and Matt, and you see these even professional athletes, when they get to the NFL, are the trainers, are they going through any type of a prehab off season or anything like that to help prevent an injury? Or do they leave that up to the athlete to go ahead and to make his own strategy of how he wants to take care of his body?
That's a great point, Greg. When you have, as an NFL team, and if you were an owner of an NFL team, and you have a lot of money invested in your employees, so to speak, your players, your athletes,
yes,
part of what you would like to do, and that's from the NFL, even to the workplace and college level, what you want to do is prevent injury in your employees. And in the NFL setting, the employees are the athletes in particular. You have a lot of money invested in them. So they do also invest a lot of money in strength and conditioning and building and developing strength and conditioning programs that are designed to prevent these injuries, because that athlete is very important and their career is very important, but also very important for that athlete to be working, quote unquote working, and on the field for their employer, which is the NFL team. So to your point, you're absolutely right. There's a lot of time, money, research invested in preventing these injuries, knowing we can't prevent everything, but doing all that we can within our power to prevent that. So it's usually part of a team strength and conditioning program, albeit some athletes probably have their own trainers and personal trainers as well.
Sure.
But it is all kind of a team approach in terms of the strength and conditioning and injury prevention at the NFL level.
Beautiful. You know, if I could just go ahead a wee little bit, before we get to Matt and surgery and things, Chris, by strengthening, you know, these young players and getting the tissues in better condition, strengthening their core, are we helping prevent arthritis later in their lives, you know, post-athletics? Does this help their body stay healthier and not start to degenerate as they get older?
That's another good point, Greg. That can be, I think we can answer that in a couple different ways. And Matt would echo this as well. When you have a major knee injury or any joint that gets compromised with a ligament tear, it really sets you up in the future to have arthritis. So the first answer to that question is yes, if we can prevent these injuries through a good strength and conditioning program and you don't have one of those injuries like an ACL injury, then hopefully we can prevent some arthritis in the future, because there's a condition in medicine we call post-traumatic arthritis. And that means just post-injury or post-trauma or after trauma arthritis that occurs. And that's a real thing. So if we can avoid the trauma in the first place, then yes, we're going to avoid arthritis in the future. The other thing that does is if you're exercising and conditioning the muscles and staying flexible, then you're going to hopefully decrease some of the weight on those joints, and decreasing the amount of force you put through your joints. For every 1 pound of weight you lose 4 pounds of force through your joints per step. So that can add up over a lifetime. So if you can stay in good physical shape and good physical conditioning, then you can also reduce the amount of force through your joints. Then you can also strengthen and protect the joints and take pressure off of those joints by having strength in the muscles that are surrounding your joint to take the pressure off of that. There's one thing that we can't change, and that's our genetics. And unfortunately or fortunately, genetics has a strong role to play in arthritis, especially the wear and tear type of arthritis. But as we're going to talk about through this program, we control the things we can control, and a good healthy weight and a good healthy act. And if we can strengthen and condition our body to strengthen the appropriate muscles to maybe reduce future injury, that's all going to go in our favor to hopefully prevent arthritis in the future.
Thank you. I think we've laid a nice groundwork for this. You know, going on, and I think I've talked to Matt about this in the past, you know, in different sports, is there different types of ACL injuries? Does the ligament get torn at different places, whether if it's a downhill skier or if it's a football player or if it's a wrestler? Or if it's a soccer player, you know, is there a difference in dealing with different athletes, or does it more have to do with, again, where the injury is? Is there anything there that's important, you know, with regard to different sports on that, Matt?
Yeah, absolutely. So different types of athletes, they are going to have they're going to be susceptible to developing different types of knee injuries. The one that really comes to mind is wrestlers. I mean, if you just ever go to a wrestling match, you'll see the position that the knee gets put in, or their entire body being contorted around. And those are typically, you know, some of the more gruesome, if you will, injuries. And a lot of times, I think the best way to think about that too is not, you know, if the ACL gets torn in such a way, but also the associated damage that happens to the knee at the time of injury. So the most common one that I typically see is a meniscal injury. So not to get too far ahead, but the meniscus is the main shock absorber in the knee. And as my brother was talking about, we were touching on, you know, delaying arthritis, reducing the risk of arthritis. When you have an associated tear along with that ligament injury, which can happen in 50 to 60% of cases, I know in my practice, I probably see it.
Yeah.
75 to maybe even up to like 90% of cases, especially in the contact sports. But when that also gets damaged, you want to make sure that that's also addressed and repaired at the time of the surgery, because that's important to not only restore the mechanics of the knee, because the meniscus plays a big role, but that's almost in some ways as important as doing the ACL reconstruction itself to stabilize that joint. And what my brother was mentioning about the post-traumatic arthritis, the biggest thing that I would convey, and I always tell the athletes this or patients that get this injury, is I say, you know, we know just from having this injury occur that the bones collide with each other in an abnormal way. They're not supposed to smack against each other. You know, my brother was talking about the, you know, the ligament stabilizing that knee. It's supposed to keep the bones in such an orientation that it allows the joint to function. So particularly with an ACL injury, what will happen is the shin bone shifts forward on the femur, the thigh bone, and then they actually collide.
Yep.
So when athletes or patients will say, I heard a pop, a lot of times they think it's because the ligament popped. It's not that the ligament popped. It's actually they hear that noise because the bones collide. And that's where we get really concerned, if you will, about the potential detrimental long-term effects in terms of post-traumatic arthritis. So it all kind of plays in, but Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, no, excellent. No, you're getting ahead of the show here.
Reel it back in then.
Hey, Matt. Yeah, let's get, you know, as far as what I wanted to go ahead and kind of get into, you know, we always talk about the four pillars. Remember the history, the exam, the diagnostics, and, of course, decision-making. Well, let's talk about symptoms. You know, when an athlete or anyone would suffer a problem like this, and, you know, who do they call to start with? Do they go to the ER? Do they go ahead and come over to you? Do they go see Chris first? You know, what are the signs and symptoms, you know, if we're talking about athletes, that maybe the coach, the trainer should know about and then go ahead and get them to the right place? Matt, what do they tell do they tell you when they come in? You started with a popping.
Well,
go ahead.
Yeah, no, absolutely. So there are certain, I call them bells and whistles or red flags whenever, you know, if there was a study that basically came out one time that said if a female athlete is running down the gym floor, say playing basketball, and there's a non-contact injury, she falls over, she is having trouble walking afterwards, she has swelling, she's limping, she has to be carried off the court, whatever it is, there's a very high probability that that's an ACL tear. That's why if you listen to ESPN any day of the week and you hear the reporter say, so-and-so went down with a non-contact injury, everyone always cringes because you hear that non-contact injury, and that is a lot of times correlated with a ligament injury or, you know, a tendon rupture. But that all kind of plays together. So those things factor in when you're taking that history, listening to that athlete. My brother could probably talk a little bit more on where he sees most of the people come from my experience, meaning where they seek their care. Usually they're heading to the ER because they had this injury. And then the ER, you know, everyone always rips on the ER, but they serve a purpose. They'll take imaging, they'll get an X-ray, and they'll say, well, we don't see a fracture. You're okay. Follow up with the sports medicine specialist. Typically, then they get into the non-operative offices first, or my brother's practice, and they get kind of worked up. They, in most situations, that athlete or patient is going to get an MRI to evaluate the ligaments and the other structure.
Yep, exactly. That's our third pillar.
Jumped ahead on the pillars.
Yeah, don't get too far ahead there. Let's talk about risk factors. You know, we're listening to the patient as to what's happening, but what are the risk factors here that could really, you know, cause a problem that we should start to think about these things ahead of time, that we can go ahead and maybe talk to our coaches or trainers or, you know, families and parents that want to make sure their kid can participate and enjoy things. And there has to be a series of risk factors here, correct?
Yeah, no, absolutely. So I mentioned it earlier, female gender is a significant several fold.
Why is that?
Well, so number one is if you just look at how a female's body is shaped versus a male, the pelvis is wider on a female. The reason that's important, you might think, okay, that's way up at the pelvis. Why does that matter at the knee? But when the pelvis is wider, if you just kind of stare down at your knees looking from top down, if you have a wider pelvis, it's going to cause more of an inward angle. We call it a valgus angle at the knee, which means the other way to think of it is knock-kneed. So everybody kind of has some friends, I'm sure, females that are knock-kneed. Even some guys have that too, but it's less common. That is a very significant risk factor for developing an ACL tear. My brother had mentioned about mechanics and correcting these problems before they happen. Females notoriously have weaker hips and weaker core. So when you factor those three things together, not only how the leg is shaped, a weaker core, weaker hips, those are significant risk factors for injuring the ACL. So beyond the history, when I see them in the office, obviously I'm going to – the red flag sports, soccer for females, volleyball is another notorious one. For females as well, too. For males, it's more of football and soccer as well, too. Beyond the history there, the first thing I'm doing is I'm observing how that athlete is. Now, if they're, you know, in a wheelchair, that's one thing. But if they come walking in, that's the first thing I'll look at is I'll look at their limb alignment because that is a huge risk factor. The other thing that I always look at, my brother touched on range of motion. So if somebody can straighten their knee beyond zero, so think of it perfectly straight, but then a decent portion of people that develop these injuries have what's called hyperextension, meaning the knee actually goes backwards into what we call clinically as recurvation. Yes, and that is also a very significant risk factor for an ACL injury. So all of these things kind of factor in together. The physical exam obviously includes observation,
sure,
inspection. You're looking at, is there swelling at the knee? So the majority of cases, although
important,
not all, you'll see it. Yes, you'll see a lot of fluid on the knee. You know, some people might think, oh, that's water on the knee. But when it happens acutely like that in the setting of injury, there's certain diagnoses that come to mind, and certainly ACL injury is one.
Beautiful.
And then, I mean, we can
let
you
me,
get into the physical
exam. Can I add a couple
of
risk factors, too? Oh, sorry.
Yeah, go ahead, Chris.
I wanted to add a couple risk factors, too, because, Greg, you had mentioned at the very top of your broadcast about we're hearing a lot about ACL injuries now.
Yes.
And Matt would echo this as well. It's the beginning of sports season when a lot of these major knee injuries occur. And it's because of that, it gets to the point that Matt was making about weakness in the musculature and things like that. At the beginning of the sports season, the muscles are a little more weak, deconditioned, especially in a high school athlete that maybe wasn't training, you know, for the last 6 months for their sports season, or not training specifically for that sport. Matt, you would probably echo this. You can interject, but I think I see a lot of ACL tears at the beginning of the sports season. Right now we're at the beginning of football season, and the winter will be at the beginning of wrestling and basketball. And so at those times of year, we tend to get a rush of ACL injuries. I think, Matt, you mentioned you had 16 ACL injuries. We just went through, you know, week two of the football season here. And that's really what I see. And that's all related to what Matt was talking about with the weakness and the deconditioning, or if that's a fancy word for being, you know, the muscles are out of shape. Plays a big part in addition to everything Matt said as well.
Beautiful, Chris.
Well, you know the interesting correlation. Yeah.
Go ahead.
I was just going to touch on, you know, it's also highlighted. Remember, obviously, we were sick of talking about COVID, but that was a huge risk factor for subsequent injuries because athletes weren't participating in whatever programs they had.
Sure.
Everybody was active. Sports,
are you
we saw
there,
a rush of injury.
Are you still there?
I'm still here. I thought I heard you ask something. But, yeah, that was the point, and that kind of highlights what my brother's mentioning. I'm glad he brought that up because, absolutely, at the beginning of the season. The other risk factor is sometimes year-round sport participation and overuse. That is a huge risk factor because it's kind of on the opposite end of the deconditioning, but the muscle fatigue and just playing through that. In the NBA, the buzzword is load management. They have all sorts of statisticians and teams running around trying to dictate the exact minutes that an athlete will play because they know above a certain threshold that particular individual is more susceptible to injury. The one that always comes to mind is Kawhi Leonard in the NBA. I mean, it seems like he's not playing just as many games as he's playing or even vice versa, but that is the whole concept behind that. The other one that I really want to talk about, because we have actually had dedicated shows to it, is concussions. So this is my brother's wheelhouse, but that has also been associated to be a significant risk factor for developing an ACL tear as well, too.
Beautiful. You know, as far as summarizing this, gentlemen, what we found, again, I think we've touched on them. You know, again, being female is definitely a big risk factor. The sports selection, soccer, football, basketball, gymnastics, downhill, you know, skiing, wrestling. Again, a big red flag, as Chris mentioned, is poor conditioning earlier in the year. You know, I have two others that are interesting. And, again, wearing footwear that doesn't fit properly. Does that kind of ring a bell at all, Chris?
Yeah, Greg, that's a good point. I think that also, that's absolutely correct. If your footwear is poor, your gait or how you're walking or running is going to be abnormal or not what you're normally used to. You're going to be stepping differently. If you look down and you take a step forward, improperly fitting footwear, your foot
sure.
can turn in, and that actually increases a little bit of the risk of tearing that ACL. But at the beginning of the season, most athletes, especially if they're not in the NFL, they're wearing footwear that's not even, let's say, broken in, for
sure.
lack of a better term. You know, they're wearing their new football cleats for the, you know, first, you know, 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And they're not broken in, and maybe they're more stiff or more rigid, and it's improperly fitting. And so that's a great point, because I think that has a couple factors. You're either wearing a new pair of shoes that's not quite ready to take the full load of what you're trying to put into
Hard
it.
Time.
And then also, if it's not appropriately fitted, because you couldn't find your right size, or a half size too big or a half size too small,
sure.
then your gait and how you ambulate and walk and run is going to be slightly altered and also increase your risk.
Excellent, excellent narrative. You know, I had one more that I'd like both of you doctors to talk about, and that's playing on artificial turf. What is the artificial turf situation? What does an athlete do differently if they're on artificial turf? You know, what are the red flags about artificial turf?
Matt?
Yeah, I think – go ahead, Matt, if you want to take.
No. You,
well, Chris, go ahead.
Well, so I think the we see a lot of that around here in Pennsylvania. A lot of our fields are artificial for the component of our weather and getting games and activities in. And what that artificial turf does, it's gotten better. The old artificial turf,
sure.
If you remember the old baseball stadiums and football stadiums that had artificial turf, it was essentially, you know, like artificial putting green with concrete underneath is what it was. So it was very rough surface to play on. And
very hard, yes.
It's developing into more of a soft structure. But what the issue becomes is the force that gets generated from the ground up through your leg with that artificial turf, there's no give to it. If you're playing on concrete with a artificial putting green on top, there's no give to that surface
at all.
And
right.
so when you plant or you stop or decelerate or you twist or you pivot in a natural grass field, what happens is your foot can move. Your foot, even though it's going to be planted into the ground, there'll be some move and some give. And if your foot's planted and it can't move and then you twist and your knee twists but your foot stays planted, that can be a risk factor. So the artificial turf, just based on the surface, can cause increase in the knee injuries just because it's not as forgiving as a natural grass surface in terms of the cushioning. And albeit these injuries do happen on natural grass as well, but the artificial turf is far less forgiving.
And that would be very similar to a basketball court as well, correct?
Absolutely correct. Yeah, you have those basketball surfaces that are very similar, and if you plant and you twist, the cleats in football, the spikes that come out are different than the basketball shoes. You're going to move a little bit more with a basketball shoe than a cleat or a spike, but that's
beautiful.
Absolutely right, Greg.
Thank you. Gentlemen, we're going to go to the studio in L.A. Mr. Mancini has a boatload of questions. So if you don't mind, we'll go to the listeners. Go ahead. Go ahead, Mark.
Let me get three of them, and we're loading up here, and it's a great show, and I'm glad the Varicalo brothers are back. Doc,
thank
as
you
start to pick up steam. Dalen from Chelmsford, Mass. Had the Otani question earlier before we started. Basically said, two-way player, seems like these pitchers are tearing their ACLs and stuff more so. They need to get Tommy John surgery. I can remember in the day when pitchers in the 70s and 80s would throw 200 innings. Are they just burning their arms out at a younger age? Are they throwing earlier in life, 11, 12 years old? We're starting to see these little leaguers do the same thing. So chances are when they get to college and the pros, total burnout with the arms. Great question.
Sure.
Yeah, that's a good question. So that's Shohei Ohtani. The guy is amazing. He's a superstar. A little bit different. Called the UCL. It's the ulnar collateral ligament that sits in the elbow. And Shohei Ohtani, for those that don't know, he's a player for the Anaheim Angels, Los Angeles Angels. And he hits and he also pitches, which is pretty rare for those that don't follow baseball. It's not a common thing that happens.
Yeah.
And he is elite at both. He's an elite pitcher. And when he's not pitching, baseball pitchers in the major leagues usually throw once every 5 days or so. And they rest and recover and recuperate in those other days. But Shohei Ohtani actually plays designated hitter, which is a position in the lineup that just hit. So
wow.
Anyway, he initially tore his ulnar collateral ligament pitching back in 2018. And when that happened, he continued to hit the rest of the year and then had what's called the Tommy John surgery, which is a reconstruction of the ligament that we were referring to. Then he went back on to pitching. And this year he was having a great year, a great hitting year and a pretty good pitching year. But then unfortunately he tore that ligament again, which is kind of more on the rarer side with our new techniques to reconstruct that ligament. But I think that gets to the point, Mark, your point about why is this happening more? And if you follow baseball, which baseball, I played baseball in college. I'm very passionate. I follow baseball a lot. I watch it with my daughters. So I'm a baseball fan through and through. If you would notice, for anyone else that follows baseball, you would probably echo this. 10 years ago, the velocities that pitchers were throwing at is completely different than the velocities that pitchers are throwing at now. And it's exceeded greatly. I don't know the exact number, but you saw pitchers throwing 90 miles an hour. You know, occasionally if a pitcher was throwing really hard 10 to 15, maybe 20 years ago, they were throwing maybe 95 miles an hour. For those of you that watch baseball now, every single pitcher that comes out, they're at least throwing 95 miles an hour or harder. And Shohei Ohtani is one of those pitchers that throws 98, 99 miles an hour with consistency.
Wow.
And I think the point that happens is if you look at the studies on that ligament in the elbow, what happens with a baseball throw is you max out the tensile load, which means the amount of force you can put through that ligament, you max it out every single time throwing a baseball. And so the harder the velocity, you're kind of going even above the tensile strength or how much that ligament can hold or withstand before it tears. And so I think you have a combination of throwing a lot of innings, throwing with harder velocities. People are pitching more, although, Greg, you probably echo this, pitchers, you know, 30 years ago would throw and throw and throw and not ever stop. But they weren't throwing 98, 99 miles an hour. Some of them were. The freak athletes were doing that, but not every single player that was coming out of the bullpen or starting a pitching game or starting a baseball game pitching. So I think it's a combination of the innings, the amount of throws they're doing, the younger age they're starting, poor mechanics, leg weakness,
sure,
and core weakness is also implicated in this. But then that velocity is just, it's ratcheted up, and everybody throws 95 to 100 miles an hour now in the major leagues, and that's why I think we're seeing that more.
Rendition on Tommy John's and elbows. But, you know, doesn't it go back also to conditioning? If we were having these young athletes, these middle-aged athletes, you know, throwing a lot of innings, throwing at 98, 100 miles an hour. What about conditioning them? Should they be in an ongoing conditioning program? Their body strong. You know,
yes,
how,
and that
how
conditioning.
Yes.
Yeah, that conditioning involves anybody who throws a baseball or pitches or who's successful would tell you throwing a baseball is a lower body activity. You use your legs, you generate force through the ground, up through your legs, and then it allows you to throw with some velocity. Now, granted, you have to have, you know, strength in the arm and range of motion and things like that, but it's from the ground up. And a very important baseball pitching throwing conditioning program involves core strength, core stability, cardiovascular conditioning, and strength that way as well. So you're absolutely right, yes.
Chris, you know, that goes back to the whole concept of mechanics. You know, have we, as far as, say, our athletic trainers, do they know the mechanics that need to be involved in keeping these athletes healthy and in prime shape? You know, we've had, with Matt, you know, we've had professional baseball players on the show. Remember that, Matt? Talking about mechanics and how
some
of the trainers don't know, and again, all the ins and outs about body mechanics in order to protect these athletes. But that's a topic for another show, all right?
Yeah.
Let's not lose sight here. We're still doing ACLs. Go ahead. Mark Mancini.
Let me throw one more because I know we're up against it with about 16 minutes, and then you guys can come back to me in about 7-8 minutes. Steve from Corvallis, Oregon says, I beg to differ, guys, a little. Nolan Ryan threw hard. He took 71 no-hitters into the seventh inning. You can't even find 71 pitchers today that can go seven innings. So I beg to differ on the speed of these things. These guys threw hard in the 70s. Another case in point, Burt Blyleven played 18 seasons, threw 200 innings. The problem today is they could be bigger, faster, stronger. They make more money, but they're nothing like yesteryear's players. I think the arms get burnt out at an early age by throwing at that age. Wow, that's another follow-up great question.
I'm not going to argue with that point that people threw hard, but I'm talking average velocity. I'm talking the amount of people that throw hard now is far more. Nolan Ryan, freak athlete. Tons of freak athletes out there. Nolan Ryan was one of a kind. We might not ever see somebody like him again, Steve Carlton, you know, with different types of, you know, innings limits. They didn't have any. I'm talking about the number of pitchers. If you watch any baseball, you watch relievers that came out of the bullpen 15, 20 years ago, they threw 92. Now every one of them throws 95 plus, or they're not making the team. So, yeah, I think there's a lot of factors, but there's going to be those exceptions like Nolan Ryan, who was just an amazing athlete who probably could have thrown forever.
Amazing athlete. You know, we've talked about Nolan before, and he worked out every day in the gym and did his treadmill. Lower body was extremely strong, and he's quite an athlete. But, again, that's the Tommy Johns. We can always bring that up again. You know, what I'd like to do, gentlemen, just to review a wee little bit here. We're getting to the end of the show. I didn't want to talk a lot about Treat Me yet. I wanted to save that for another show. But, you know, with regard to, again, talking about ACL, we know, again, symptom-wise, usually our patient may have a loud pop or a popping sensation in the knee, severe pain, inability to continue their activity at that time, rapid swelling, loss of range of motion, instability, giving way with weight bearing. That's when they're coming in to see you. And, you know, we've talked about our risk factors, female, the sports issues with regard to soccer, football, basketball, gymnastics, wrestling, poor conditioning, you know, wearing footwear that doesn't fit, poorly maintained sports equipment as ski bindings, also playing on artificial turf. So a lot of these things are going on that we're giving information, you know, to our listeners. And, you know, if we start to, again, our hour is getting away from us here. You know, if we start with, you know, what are some essentials here of therapy? You know, if we start with therapy, we're going to need another show to talk about ACL therapy and all the great things that are being done and getting our athletes back to the field. But, Chris, real quickly, with regard to summarizing from your conservative standpoint, then I want to get to Matt with regard to a general outline on therapy. So, Chris, go ahead. What are we doing with therapy when these people come in and you see them for the first time?
Yeah, so most of the time when I see them for the first time and they've had an ACL injury and they've torn their ACL, they have all the symptoms that we discussed. But as time, Matt had mentioned that the bones hit against each other, the shin bone hits against the thigh bone.
Yes.
That creates a lot of pain for about 2 weeks or so. And it's essentially a bruise to the bone that happens, or sometimes a little bit worse than that. But a lot of the pain comes from that and the swelling in the knee, which when an ACL tears, there's an artery that also bleeds into the knee joint that creates a big bloody knee joint.
Wow.
And so once that dissipates over the first couple weeks, typically the pain is a lot better. The thing that we look for a surgical referral, or if we're going to have to talk about needing to do something more than rehabilitation and physical therapy, would be a symptom of instability. So what that means is when you put your foot down and you turn one side to the other, you twist on it, the knee does not support you. It gives out, so to speak. And really, when I see a patient or an athlete in the office and we're talking about their ACL injury, and on sports medicine, there's a lot of different ways to treat it, but the ultimate treatment ends up in a reconstruction of that ligament to rebuild and restore the function of the knee. If they're complaining a lot about instability, meaning that knee is giving out without warning and it's not supporting their body weight, that is really the thing that I need to hear, or sometimes I don't hear it, I need to ask about it,
sure,
to know whether a patient is going to be successful in terms of rehabilitating their ACL injury without a surgery. And to be honest with you, Greg, and athletes and younger patients, if we are really trying to prevent arthritis in the future, every time that knee is unstable, every time that knee gives out, there's a chance for more damage to be done to the other structures. The ACL tear is already there. We're not changing that. But what we can change, or what the athlete can do, is actually make the problem worse for our surgeon to fix, or for long-term health of their knee. With each time it gives out, you can create more and more damage, because that giving out is the knee, the bones shifting against each other, and it can create more meniscus tears or worse tearing or injury to the cartilage. So if instability is a major symptom, that is really what I tune into to know whether I need to refer them to Matt for any reconstruction right away, or whether we can have a different discussion and kind of time the reconstruction, because we were really concerned in our practice about preserving function and structure of the knee for as long as possible. We don't want arthritis in our 35-year-old former athlete.
Yes.
We want a nice, normal, healthy knee, and that instability is a key symptom.
Beautiful. And, you know, Chris, with regard to, say, putting together a plan, you mentioned, you know, they do have an ACL tear. How do you know that? You know, as far as the diagnostics, just a real quick thumbnail sketch here. You know, how do you differentiate between an ACL sprain and an ACL tear? How do you know that in your practice? Go ahead.
That's a great question. So a lot of it is with physical exam maneuvers, and then we know the diagnostic imaging. Every time we talk orthopedics, we talk about x-rays and MRIs. Yeah. Of the joints that are affected. And so really physical exam, there's some maneuvers where you can actually pull the shin bone forward on the thigh bone and compare it to their good knee or their opposite knee or their uninjured knee. And you can get a sense of what we call translation, which means how far that shin bone would move forward on the thigh bone. And it's a very, very much a feel test, and doing a lot of them, a really skilled orthopedic or sports medicine physician can probably tell you if you have an ACL tear without an MRI. But that being said, we also get x-rays to look for associated bone injuries. X-rays show the structure of the bones and the joint space. And sometimes with an ACL tear, you can have an associated bone injury. Not always, but there is a certain pattern that can happen. And then we really, really rely on the MRI, because even if we know there's an ACL tear, what Matt would probably echo this as well, we're looking for other structures that are possibly damaged. So we know if it's ending up in surgery, our surgeon, Matt, knows to go in, and he knows what his plan is. He knows what he needs to fix. He knows what instruments to bring to the table to do that. So the physical exam is very important. There's some key physical exams. We mentioned the history already, but then we also do obtain x-rays and an MRI. But the long story short is, if you think you have an ACL tear, you should see an experienced sports medicine or orthopedic doctor to really evaluate that to give you an answer.
Beautiful. Chris, excellent summary. And again, you talk about the four pillars. You hit them all, you know, as far as history, exam, diagnostic testing, then, of course, decision making. And, Matt, we're going to finish up with you this morning, but I'm going to need you both back another time. That, Matt, you know, with regard to these patients, if you're referred a patient that, quote, has an ACL tear, Matt, typically, are there different locations for the tear, or is it all predominantly in one area of the ligamentous anatomy?
Yeah, that's a great question. The most common way that the ACL is going to tear is it'll actually tear off of the thigh bone, part of the femur,
where it's attached and then it travels down to the tibia to stabilize the knee joint, it most classically tears off the femur there. But you can have a bunch of different types of rupture patterns. But kind of at the end of the day, and I was alluding to this a little bit earlier, is
yes.
The ACL, just because of its location inside the knee joint, it's going to have a hard time healing itself. That's why even sometimes sprains or partial injuries end up needing like a full-blown reconstruction. That's obviously a topic for another day where we can talk about the treatment options. But, yeah, that's a little bit of a teaser there because it's hard to kind of get into this part of the –
sure.
Treatment plan without going full tilt here, but tune in next time.
Well, I want to keep that as a tease to our audience. Thank you. And, you know, as far as location of damage or a tear, does the therapy change? Just kind of giving an overview here, or is it all
mm-hmm.
pretty much the same therapy?
Well, so I'll just kind of reiterate the points about the prehab that my brother touched upon. If I ever get referred an athlete, the first thing I'm looking at in terms of the pillars there on the physical exam is I'm checking to make sure that they have close to full range of motion and they have swelling control, because the biggest thing that a surgeon will look at when an athlete or a patient has an ACL tear and they're in the office, or any type of knee injury for that matter, is if you operate on a stiff knee, it's going to be very hard for that patient to get their range of motion back with physical therapy. So that's an absolute must. So I can't tell you how many times per week I'll have an athlete in the office that maybe they slipped through the cracks and they didn't start their physical therapy. They have been waiting and waiting weeks to see me, and the first thing I say is, we got to get you into physical therapy. So what we try to do in our practice is get that ahead of time, get the athlete into therapy. Now, your point about, does the therapy change? Really, with the ACL reconstruction, it does not matter where the tear is or what type of tear. If you're doing the full-blown ACL reconstruction, the rehab is going to essentially be the same. The thing that will change it is if you do additional ligament repairs or if you're fixing the meniscus. And
sure.
That
so
could
if there's
slow things
more
down
extensive
a bit,
damage.
You got another structure seal. Yeah, exactly.
Wow.
And the other thing that
you
we didn't really talk about is what happens if there's a chunk of cartilage missing. So that's also another part of it too. So
yeah, gentlemen, we're at the end of the hour here. I'm getting the signal to close the show. Great show. A lot of great information, you know, talking about non-contact injury, contact injury. We talked about a lot of different things today. You know, we want to go into therapy. I'd like to have you two gentlemen back in a couple of weeks talking about ACL therapy. And maybe we can watch the athletes that have had injuries, have they come back to full tilt now in the NFL. So thank you, Mr. Mancini. Do you want to finish this up? Do you have any more questions for us?
Yeah, I had a quick one. I don't know if we can get time. We're about a minute and 30 seconds left before it cuts us out. But real fast. Joey from Bucks County, PA, came in, basically wanted to talk about the ACL injuries in basketball. We've seen the Bill Waltons. We've seen the Greg Odens. We've seen these kind of guys, the wear and tear. Is a sprain, because he knows a sprain is just as bad as a broken ankle, does that work on a partial tear in the ACL compared to tearing the ACL completely? I don't know if we have enough time to talk about that, guys, and we can tease Joey for the next time the Varicellos come in, but any quick comment on that?
I think the short answer is the instability. A sprain with no instability can maybe be able to be treated without surgery. A sprain with instability, the knee's giving out, will probably have to go to surgery. But the unstable factor of the knee is probably the short answer to that.
Wow. Beautiful.
Okay.
We'll
get that
we'll
in the next time they come
again.
In, Doc. Doc, let everybody know how they can get a hold of you and tease them next week where we will have another great guest.
Good. You know, our listeners, as always, GJRMD308@outlook.com. Next week, we're going to go back onto our cancer program. We're talking about kidney cancer. Then we're following that the following week with cancer of the voice box. And we may want the Varicellos to give their contact information also, Mark, if there's time, please. Go ahead, Matt.
Matt?
Yeah. How can people get a hold of you?
Yeah. So my email is mavaracallo at phhealthcare.org. I'll post it on the Saucy Spin, the Doc Talk website as well, too, Mike, information. I'm also on social media.
Great. We'll drive it up all the social media. Yep.
C-V-A-R-A-C-A-L-L-O at phhealthcare.org. That's Chris Varicello.
Ah, great.
Excellent.
As we wrap this up, we get him up on the social medias. We hashtag him. So great listenership across the country. I want to thank the Varicellos and Dr. Greg Roscoe. We'll be back next week, same time, same channel. And then we'll have that big roundtable discussion. We're teasing that for the end of September. So that's going to be a good one, a 90-minute show. Till then, have a blessed one. Catch the archive version on blogtalkradio.com/Mancini Sports. If you're in the Pittsburgh area, go check the guys out. They'll love to see you. Till then, have a blessed and safe Labor Day. Thanks for tuning.
Thank you. Thank you all.